Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're charting the path of Jonah Ray Rodriguez. You probably know him, actor, comedian, writer, musician.
Yeah, his work's kind of everywhere, isn't it? From stand-up stages to, well, cult TV shows and even deep cut punk podcasts.
Exactly. And what we're digging into today isn't just like a list of credits. We're looking at how deliberate it all seems. It feels like a real strategy,
yeah.
You know, fusing that indie hustle with some pretty big collaborations.
That's the mission, right? We've got the source material and we want to unpack it to show how we actually pulled off this like decades-long shift. I mean, moving from Hawaii, grinding it out in the L.A. comedy scene.
Which is notoriously tough.
Oh, absolutely. And ending up hosting the revival of Mystery Science Theater 3000? That's quite a leap.
It really is. So, okay, let's break down this trajectory. We're going to focus on maybe three key things that really defined his success.
Okay.
First, that big jump moving from being this dedicated punk rock guy to focusing hard on comedy. That's a risk, right?
For sure. A total identity shift, almost.
Then second, how important those collaborations were in L.A., especially like podcasts and the live comedy stuff, building audiences completely outside the old network system.
Mm-hmm. The power of community there.
And finally, how that punk rock DIY thing he started with,
yeah.
How that actually prepared him for how things work now, you know, using Kickstarter, independent funding to keep these big legacy shows going.
It's almost like learning to book a punk tour was perfect training for hosting a show set in space with robots.
Weirdly, yeah. Okay, let's start at the beginning. Hawaii. So to really get the guy who pilots the satellite of love, you gotta go back. Jonah Ray Rodriguez, born August 3rd, 1982, Kailua, Hawaii, on Oahu.
Right, so he's what, 43 in our timeline now? And the interesting thing, looking at the sources, is where his energy went early on.
Yeah, it wasn't comedy clubs.
No, not at all. It was music. Deep into the local Hawaii rock and specifically the punk scene. And that's super important, I think.
Why is that?
Well, okay, maybe he wasn't writing jokes yet, but think about what he was learning. Being on stage, dealing with crowds, working with a band that's all performance.
Right. Improvising, collaborating.
Exactly. And crucially, that whole DIY culture. Booking shows, making flyers, you know, the whole punk ethos of just doing it yourself, that really sticks with him.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. The self-starter thing. So those skills are there, even if they're aimed at music first. But then the big change, he moves.
He moves to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And the plan, initially at least, was still punk rock. Keep the band dream alive.
But LA has other distractions.
You could say that. The comedy scene there is just massive.
Yeah.
Right? And it seems like gradually his focus started to shift. He began channeling that same energy, that same commitment into writing and performing comedy instead.
So it wasn't like an overnight switch, more of a slow pivot.
Yeah, exactly. Investing in a whole new kind of performance, a different scene.
And where did he plug into that scene?
The key place seems to be the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, UCB in LA.
Which, we should probably clarify for people, wasn't just any comedy club back then.
No way. UCB was the place.
Yeah.
Super competitive, yeah. But also this incredible incubator for talent, for writing, for performing, and maybe most importantly for networking.
Right. That's where everyone met everyone.
Totally. He becomes a regular performer there, doing stand-up, doing sketches. He's building his chops, but he's also building his community. These are the people he'd end up working with on huge projects later.
And you see that payoff pretty quickly, right? In terms of getting actual screen credits.
Yeah. The sources show him popping up fairly early on. Shows like Crossballs, that satirical news thing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And the Sarah Silverman program, appearances on Jimmy Kimmel Live, even Saul the Mole Man.
So not just stage time. He's breaking into the professional side almost immediately.
It looks like it. That punk energy from Hawaii is now fueling this, like, L.A. comedy hustle. He's in the system. #2. The writing room grind and early TV exposure. So, okay, he's got the UCB stage cred. He's performing. But the next phase, you really see him digging into the grind of the TV writer's room. That's where you learn the craft, you know, the discipline.
The sheer volume of joke writing.
Oh, yeah. Under pressure, on deadline. And his first proper step, according to the material, was as a writer's assistant on the Andy Milonakis show.
Which is often that first foot in the door, right? You're doing admin, maybe getting coffee, but you're in the room.
You're absorbing everything, how jokes are structured, how stories break, the whole rhythm of TV production.
But he wasn't just doing admin, was he?
No, it seems like he was juggling things right away. He was also writing and performing on this Showtime sketch pilot called The Offensive Show.
So writer, performer, assistant doing it all at once, that's intense.
Yeah, definitely wearing multiple hats from the get-go.
And this period, like, roughly 2009 to 2012, we're calling it the Newsweb Soup Cycle. Why that name?
Well, because it's this really foundational time where he's doing a lot of behind-the-scenes writing, mostly for shows that riff on news or internet culture.
Yeah.
It's honing that rapid-fire topical humor skill.
Which you absolutely need for something like, say, riffing on bad movies later on.
Precisely. Look at the sequence. First, he's writing and doing some voices for Super News on current TV. Very topical, fast turnaround.
Okay.
Then he moves over to G4, writing for Web Soup. Again, internet culture, quick jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big step up, writing for E's main satire show, The Soup.
Which was a huge deal at the time. Super competitive writer's room.
Absolutely. You're talking about generating tons of jokes every single day about often really silly, fleeting pop culture moments. It's like joke writing boot camp. That muscle memory is crucial for what comes later.
But then he leaves in 2012.
Yeah, and this seems like a really significant moment. He walks away from The Soup. That's not just changing jobs. That feels like a strategic choice.
Leaving a stable, high-profile network gig.
To move towards more independent stuff.
Yeah, that sounds risky. Especially back in 2012. Podcasting wasn't exactly paying the bills for everyone yet. Web series were still kind of volatile.
Definitely risky.
Mm-hmm.
But it suggests he was willing to trade that security for more control, more independence, which, again, echoes that DIY punk thing, right?
True. So where does that independence lead him first?
Back to hosting, actually, but in the digital space. He hosted Joe Genius, which was an online show for Revision 3.
Revision 3, yeah. They were one of those early players in online video, doing lots of niche, techie, gamer-focused stuff.
Exactly. And Joe Genius was focused on, like, humor and DIY science experiments.
Okay, wait. Humor and science? That sounds oddly specific.
It is.
Yeah.
But think about it. It means he had to be funny, engaging, and articulate about sometimes complex or technical stuff. He had to sound curious and smart while still landing jokes.
That sounds a lot like the skill set you'd need for MST3K, riffing on sci-fi tropes and cheesy effects.
Doesn't it? It feels like accidental perfect training, learning to riff on detailed nerdy material.
And he was doing other independent stuff too, right? Not just that hosting gig.
Yeah, the hustle continued. He launched his own web series, The Freeloader's Guide to Easy Living with Jonah Ray. And he was creating videos for Super Deluxe, especially from places like South by Southwest.
So mastering that online comedy language, fast, shareable, community-focused, building his own platforms.
Yeah.
So the early 2010s, it's not just about him doing his own web stuff. It's really about collaboration, building platforms together. And you can't talk about that without talking about the whole Nerdist thing.
Oh, absolutely. The Nerdist phenomenon was huge.
Yeah.
And Jonah Ray wasn't just like an occasional guest. He was one of the main co-hosts with Chris Hardwick on the podcast, on the TV show.
That platform was massive back then. It gave him this direct line to a huge, super engaged audience.
Exactly the audience you'd want, right? People interested in comedy, geek culture, niche topics. It really cemented his public image as this funny, knowledgeable guy who was part of that whole scene.
How did he balance that, though? Being a key figure on this increasingly big, almost mainstream platform like Nerdist, while still keeping his, like, indie punk cred?
That's a good question. I think it speaks to authenticity, maybe. He seemed genuinely into both worlds. He wasn't just playing a part.
And we also see him trying to launch his own stuff around this time, even if it didn't always fly initially. Like Jonah's Arcade.
Right. That was a pilot he created and starred in, focused on video games and comedy. Comedy Central didn't pick it up, which, you know, happens all the time in L.A. We know this because he mentioned it on the podcast back in, like, February 2011.
Standard Hollywood setback.
But here's the key part. He didn't just let it disappear. He got the same production team he knew from Web Soup, and they released it on YouTube themselves.
Ah, taking control. The DIY thing again.
Exactly. If the front door is closed, find another way to get your stuff out there.
Yeah.
Self-distribution. Don't wait for permission.
Okay, so Nerdist gave him huge visibility. But the real game changer, the thing that really put him on the map for a mainstream comedy audience, that has to be the meltdown, right? With Kumail Nanjiani.
Absolutely. The meltdown was pivotal.
Yeah.
And it started small, relatively speaking, as a live weekly comedy show.
Held where?
At Meltdown Comics in Los Angeles, which wasn't just a comic book store. It was this iconic hub, a physical center for that whole geek culture comedy scene overlap.
So hosting a show there meant you were plugged right into the heart of that community, building a super dedicated local following.
Definitely. Pure grassroots. And it was built on those connections, UCB, podcasts, the whole LA Comedy Network.
And the team behind it was solid, too.
Yeah, it was Jonah co-hosting with Kumail Nanjiani, and Kumail's wife, Emily V. Gordon, was producing. That core team, Jonah, Kumail, Emily, they really knew how to put on a great live show consistently.
They understood the logistics, not just the joke.
Right. They built something that felt authentic but was also really well run. And that combination, well, it got noticed.
Comedy Central noticed.
Yep. Late June 2013, they greenlit the TV version, The Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail.
So that's the moment. The indie live scene, built on friendships and community, breaks through onto major cable TV, validated by its own success.
And it worked. The show debuted in July 2014, ran for three solid seasons, ending in 2016.
That's a good run. Gave him serious network hosting experience, curating talent.
And the timing is interesting too, right? It wraps up just around the time the MST3K hosting gig gets announced. It feels like the perfect lead-in. That collaborative phase set him up perfectly for stepping into a big solo hosting role.
Okay, so he's got Nerdist, he's got The Meltdown on Comedy Central. Things are clearly taking off in the comedy world. But what's really interesting about Ray is that he doesn't seem to, like, leave his roots behind.
Not at all. He's actively tending to them, even as his comedy career is blowing up. And the prime example of this is the whole Jonah Radio era.
Right, his own podcast.
Yeah, launched in October 2012. Now, think about that timing. He's just left the soup. The Meltdown TV show is about to happen. Nerdist is massive. He could have just focused on those big comedy platforms.
But instead,
he starts a podcast specifically dedicated to independent music, featuring guests from punk bands, indie rock scenes. It's like his anchor back to that first identity.
So it wasn't just a comedy chat show. It was specifically about music.
Very much so. The sources mentioned guests like Man-Man, Andrew Jackson, Jihad, Pup, Harmar, Superstar. These are not mainstream pop acts. He's keeping that connection to the indie and punk world alive and very public.
Maintaining that authenticity we talked about.
Exactly. And he takes it a step further. He doesn't just talk about indie music. He actually gets involved in the business side.
How so?
On a 2014 episode of Jonah Radio, he announces he's launching his own record label. Literally, Figurative Records. Partnering with ATS, which is Special Thing Records.
Wow, a record label. What was the idea behind it?
This is where it gets really cool, I think. The concept was to be a comedy and music label. The plan was to release splits, you know, like a 7-inch record.
Yeah, classic punk format.
Right, with a comic on one side and a band they're friends with on the other.
Okay, that's a perfect synthesis, isn't it? Directly combining his two worlds, formalizing that link between indie comedy and indie music.
Totally. It's like bringing his Comedy Network into the physical distribution world of indie music. Super DIY, leveraging his connections, operating outside the Hollywood system. Collaboration, but on his own terms.
And speaking of physical releases, he put out his own stand-up that way too, right? Separate from the TV stuff.
Yeah, his first stand-up release was actually way back in 2006. It was a 7-inch record called This Is Crazy Mixed Up Plumbing, released on a Special Thing Records.
Again, with the 7-inch vinyl, that choice feels deliberate.
It really does. It's embracing that punk aesthetic for his comedy. Short, punchy, collectible. Reinforces the connection.
Then he had a second release later.
Yep, in May 2012. Hello, Mr. Magic Plane Person, hello. Came out as he was leaving the soup and starting radio.
How was that one received?
Well, the sources mentioned it got mixed reviews.
Oh, interesting. Why do you think that was? He's a known name by then. He's on Nerdist.
It's hard to say for sure, but maybe there's a tension there. Perhaps the raw indie style of his stand-up didn't quite match what critics expected from the guy they saw on TV. Or maybe the format, the physical record, just didn't connect with mainstream comedy reviewers used to digital albums or specials.
So potentially a clash between his different identities or audiences.
Could be. It shows the challenge of navigating those two worlds, Reg. You might not please the punk fans and the E! Network critics at the exact same time. And maybe he was fine with that.
Okay, so we've traced all these threads. The punk DIY start, the UCB training, the writing room grind, the podcasting and collaboration boom, keeping the music connection alive. It really feels like all of this was leading somewhere specific.
It really does. And that somewhere specific turned out to be hosting Mystery Science Theater 3000. Stepping into that role, it wasn't just like getting cast in any sitcom. This was different.
How so?
Well, first, the announcement itself. November 16th, 2015. Joel Hodgson, the creator, announces Jonah Ray is the new host for the show's return. That immediately puts him in this lineage, you know, following Joel himself, than Mike Nelson, it's a big deal for fans.
A beloved, almost sacred cult show. He's now Jonah Heston up in the satellite of love.
Right. But just as important as who was hosting was how the show was coming back. It wasn't a network deciding to reboot it in the usual way.
No, this was the Kickstarter campaign.
Exactly. A massive, record-breaking Kickstarter campaign. The entire revival was funded by the fans.
And this is where Ray's background seems perfectly suited, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Think about it. His whole career, from the punk scene to UCB to radio to Nerdist, was built on connecting with niche, passionate communities. He knew how to speak their language. He was one of them in many ways.
So the fans funding it weren't just giving money to bring back a show.
They were investing in that whole independent collaborative spirit that Ray himself represented. Having him as the host felt like validation of that approach. It bypassed the whole Hollywood gatekeeper system.
Yeah, the money came direct from the audience, led by Joel, but having Jonah on board, it felt like the right fit for that community-driven model.
And it worked incredibly well. They raised a ton of money.
And then the show actually got made and distributed.
Yep. The new seasons, seasons 11 and 12 with Jonah Heston, they landed on Netflix, premiered April 14, 2017.
Which is kind of the perfect modern model, isn't it?
How do you mean?
Crowdfunded production, ensuring fan buy-in and creative control, partnered with a major streamer for global reach. Best of both worlds.
And his role wasn't just a one-off, right? He stuck around.
He did. Joel Hodgson ran another successful Kickstarter in spring 2021 for season 13.
And Jonah was confirmed to return. Confirmed return as Jonah Heston. So he cemented his place. Think about that arc. From writer's assistant on Milanakis, writing jokes for Web Soup, mastering that timing, to becoming the face of this huge pop culture revival that literally depends on grassroots funding.
Every step really did seem like preparation for this specific kind of unique responsibility. Hashtag, tag, 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 horses, synthesis, and personal life. So looking back at the whole picture, it's clear Ray hasn't just stuck to one thing. His career is all about mixing it up, different mediums, different genres. To really get it, you kind of need to see the breadth of his other work, too.
Yeah, it's quite a list. Maybe instead of just rattling them off, we can group them a bit. Like, first, you see how comfortable he is in that quick-witted conversational comedy space.
Like panel shows and late night.
Exactly. He pops up on Conan, does Drunk History. He was on at Midnight, even did Talking Dead regularly. It shows he can handle that live, off-the-cuff, high-pressure comedy environment. He's fluent in it.
Okay, what else?
Then there's his film work. It leans pretty heavily into horror and cult movies, which fits perfectly with the whole MST3K vibe.
Right. Makes sense. Well, like what?
Films like Mama's Boy, Victor Crowley, which is part of that Hatchet slasher series. More recently, things like Christmas, Bloody Christmas, and that anthology, Satanic Hispanics.
So he's comfortable in those very specific genre fan communities.
Seems like it. Underscores that connection to niche audiences.
And the music connection keeps popping up too, right? Even in small ways.
Yeah, the sources mention him appearing in a music video for the band Bayside for their song It Don't Exist. It's just another little reminder that music and collaborating within that scene was always kind of humming along in the background.
Never fully went away.
Nope. And maybe just quickly touch on the personal side for context.
Sure. The sources note he married Deanna Rooney back on April 27, 2013. They recently had their 10-year anniversary.
And if you map that onto his career timeline, 2013 is right before The Meltdown gets picked up by Comedy Central and just after he launched Jonah Radio.
Interesting time.
Yeah, it suggests this period of maybe finding some personal stability, right? As his biggest collaborative projects were really taking off. That kind of foundation probably helps when you're managing the stress of launching your own stuff and stepping into bigger spotlights.
Okay, so let's try to synthesize this whole journey. What's the main takeaway? He starts in obscurity, playing punk rock in Hawaii.
Moves to L.A., grinds through UCB, learns the technical side in writers' rooms like The Soup, then pivots.
Right, pivots to building his own audience through things like Nerdist and Jonah Radio, finds massive success collaborating on The Meltdown.
And throughout it all, keeps that independent, music-focused side project going. It's this blend of skills, technical writing, community-building, indie cred, collaborative spirit.
That positions him perfectly for the MST3K role.
Exactly. It wasn't just about being funny. It was about finding someone who understood how to connect with and, crucially, sustain a dedicated community outside the old studio system. He embodied the very model the revival needed to succeed. It felt earned in a way. Hashtag tag tag outro, Kate.
All right, let's wrap up this deep dive. Key takeaways for you listening. Jonah Ray's career. It's really a masterclass in how things work now, isn't it? You need the synergy. You need the writing chops, yeah, but also the ability to collaborate effectively and build your own thing independently. Podcasts, crowdfunded TV, that's part of the toolkit now.
And that leads to, I think, a really crucial final point. His knack for shifting between writing for big structured network shows like The Soup and then turning around and creating his own successful indie platforms like Radio or The Meltdown. That made him kind of bulletproof in a way.
How do you mean?
He wasn't waiting for Hollywood to give him permission. He built his audience directly. That independence, that proven ability to connect with a fan base made him the absolute perfect choice for a show like MST3K, which had to prove itself directly to its audience through Kickstarter. It skipped the network execs entirely. He was the embodiment of that new path.
Okay, so here's something to chew on, a final thought based on all this. We've talked a lot about how he consistently blends music and comedy, and specifically about his record label idea, literally figurative records pairing comics and bands.
Yeah, that synthesis concept.
Right. So given his whole career has been about innovation and collaboration across these fields, what could be next? Is there some future media format that takes that idea even further? Maybe some kind of new digital platform or even a touring model that formally merges a live comedy show like The Meltdown with live band performances, really crystallizing that intersection he's been working at ever since he left Hawaii. What would that look like?